welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining me from Dallas, Texas is Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners.
Joining us from vacation, McMahon, from vacation, is Tim Bontemps in Mexico.
Well, McMahon did this from vacation a couple weeks ago, so I didn't think it was above me to do it from vacation. Also. So here I am.
So did Wendy in Hawaii. And I will point out mine was a working vacation because I tried to squeeze a vacation in, and the NBA said, no. We'll have the draft and free agency during that time you're trying to squeeze a vacation in.
Well, much obliged that Bontemps would join us from vacation.
It's always fun to do the pod.
Bontemps, how many Spanish words do you know other than cerveza and por favor?
Those are two of the ones that I do know. That I probably use the most. I know a decent amount of vocab in Spanish. I can understand when people are talking to me. I can't exactly respond very well, but I have a decent number of words.
Okay.
All right. I only knew a handful of words in Japanese and I got by. So, one of them was, katame, which means, cooked, well done.
Oh, that could be important.
You know, the Japanese don't always like to cook things to the medium level that we like, much less the past raw. So that was key. I'm sure there somebody who speaks Japanese will tell me how much I just botched that. But okay, so the win totals, the over-under win totals are out now that the offseason is essentially complete. You know, I suppose that there's a chance of a trade between now and start of training camp, although I don't sense that. I know everybody's watching Ben Simmons. I don't sense that a trade is in the offing. Bontemps, I know you're on the Sixers. Do you feel the same way on that?
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about for a while, the Ben Simmons situation is reliant on someone else wanting to be traded and the Sixers being able to do something. And it's hard for me to see, you know, Dame Lillard potential trade materializing in the next few weeks.
And well, Lillard continues to sit on the fence and say, I'm fine right now.
Right. I don't see it. If that hasn't changed by this point, I don't see that changing before camp starting. And I see the same thing as far as the Bradley Beal situation goes. And there's not really anybody else you'd look at and say that it makes sense for Philly to try to trade Ben Simmons right now. So
the intelligence is the teams that have talked to Philly, they are not right now in the mode for trading Ben Simmons. It doesn't mean that he's not available, but right now, it does not appear there are any active discussions for Ben Simmons. And I think Ben is preparing to start the season with Philadelphia. He may not be thrilled about that because he's been in trade rumors the entire offseason. And I'm sure
the entire time since Daryl Morey's arrived in Philadelphia. Let's be real.
And let's be honest, since he passed up the wide open dunk in the playoffs, I'm not so sure that his Q rating in Philly is that high.
And so, you're not sure?
I think Ben will probably maybe like fly in the night before training camp in the cover of darkness. He's been working out in LA. So since we think that these essentially are going to be the teams at the start of the season, obviously wild stuff happens during the year, but the win totals are out. I want to take a look at a few of them. And always the ones at the very top and the ones at the very bottom are the ones that are most interesting. You know, there's some in the middle that you could spar over. But at the very top, the Brooklyn Nets, 54.5 is their over under for wins. It's a tough one, Bontemps, because I don't know who's going to play for the Nets and for how long and all these things. They obviously have a spectacular team and they should win a lot of games, but a 55 win over under is a big number.
Yeah. And this is always a fun thing to look at least for me, because it gives you a chance to try to figure out how you think the teams stack up in the league. And if you go through the win totals and kind of gauge it out and think, oh, well, I think this team is a few wins over or a few wins under what Vegas thinks, might give you a sense of seeing where you at least think that there might be some changes from what sort of the consensus is on teams in the league. And part of the thinking, especially when you're talking about the top and the bottom of the league in terms of figuring out where you feel about or how you feel about these win totals, is looking at it and saying, what is the motivation for these teams going into the season? Because a lot of this just comes down to how are these teams going to approach the year? And you look at, you know, the two teams everybody has talked about the most this offseason, the Nets and the Lakers, and it's hard to know, to your point, what their motivations for the season are going to be. Both of those teams are, you would think, going to be hyper-focused on being ready for April, May, and June, and have a lot of older players, have a lot of guys that they're going to probably be conservative with minutes-wise and games-wise at points. We've seen the Nets are very, very conservative with how they approach injuries.
That's a very key factor here. In my mind, the way the Nets treat injuries is a key factor in if you wanted to make this bet. Because,
totally.
I mean, forget about that Kyrie has now shown us that he may want to take leaves every now and then. Let's just say that he doesn't do that this year. Kyrie gets hurt. He's an injury-prone player. And by the way, Durant missed how much with a hamstring injury last year? Months.
Yep.
Right?
As did Harden. And, right. You know, Harden for his whole career has been remarkably durable until – last season. James Harden
turned,
also
I think he turned 32 years old today. That's getting up.
Today's his 32nd birthday, and you know, some of those 32 years have been lived pretty hard. I don't know if he'll be with his personal trainers in Vegas at the start of training camp this year, so perhaps he'll come in a little bit.
The word is that Harden
condition.
Is in good shape. That's the word. Yeah. He's in good shape.
And so, you know, Harden, look, maybe last year is going to be an exception. Certainly to this point in his career, it is. He has been a tremendously durable player until this year. You know, if James Harden's back to being an, you know, high 70s, 80 game player, it's really hard for me to see them not hitting the over here. I mean, this is obviously a team with 60 plus win talent, but it's also the biggest wild card because just what you're saying. I mean, is Kyrie going to play 30 games? Is he going to play 60 games? Is KD going to play, you know, I mean, Katie obviously proved that, you know, come playoff time, he's ready to play every single minute. But I think it's reasonable to anticipate that for the rest of Katie's career, and by the way, rightfully so, the regular season will be kind of about just managing his way through it.
Yeah, totally. And that's why, to me, looking at this, when you talk about the incentives for teams to push in the regular season, while the Lakers and Nets, to your point, McMahon, could easily finish with the best records of both conferences, I wouldn't feel comfortable betting the over-under on either of them just for that reason. Like, they could both go into the playoffs.
Well, we haven't even given the Lakers over-under yet. So,
which is 51.5, right?
Yeah. So,
but, you know, the other thing here is how much does home court advantage in the first round matter to the Nets? Right. Certainly, you know, I mean, Harden said it. If they're healthy, he doesn't think they can be beat.
Right.
Call it confidence, arrogance, whatever you want to call it. Having said that, I think if they have a chance to make sure that a game seven would be in Brooklyn over Milwaukee, it'd be in their best interest to.
Well, let's talk about Milwaukee real quick.
Yep.
So before we get to the West, just before we get to Lakers, Milwaukee has the second highest win total, one game less than Brooklyn at 53.5.
Second highest total in the league too.
Yes, those are two highest in the league, yes. By the way, I feel like the Eastern Conference is going to be reasonably competitive this year. I'm not saying that there's going to be, you know, 650-win teams or whatever that was. Maybe the one year in the West, it was like 9 or something.
Mm-hmm. There's 12 teams you can make a legitimate argument are playoff-quality teams in the Eastern Conference.
Right,
that's
so
a lot.
I think that overall the win totals in the East may be a little bit down just because it's highly more competitive. But, you know – it is a rare year where you have the highest team at 54.5. You know, the odds makers are baking in what they expect to be a competitive East. Right. The thing about the Bucks is I think they have one thing that they have in their favor, other than they've got Giannis and they're great, but they're going to have great continuity. I know they lost PJ Tucker, but they're generally going to have their same team. And I would assume that's going to be in their favor, assuming relative health. And certainly when you look at teams like the Lakers or the Clippers, teams that have major changes that they have to deal with for their roster and other teams as well, That's going to be a factor. So I think continuity plays into the Bucks' favor at 53.5 on this.
I also think that there's going to be a lot of incentive and push from the Bucks to McMahon's prior point about the Nets. I think the Bucks are going to try very hard to be the number one seed. I think they're going to want, I don't think they're going to want to be in a situation where they have to potentially play a game seven on the road against the Nets team with those three guys all healthy. Right. I mean, I think they obviously survived that last year by the skin of their teeth.
But yeah, because only one of them was healthy.
Right. And I think coming into this season, it's going to, like, I think the incentive is there for the Bucks to push in a way that, to McMahon's point, the Nets clearly are not that concerned about anybody from the standpoint that they think if they're healthy, they're the best team in the league. And deservedly so. Like, they should feel confident. So when you talk about the incentive structure in place for teams, like, to me, I think the Bucks are one of the best bets on the board because I think they're going to go, so, assuming health, well north of 53.5. And so I think they'll have the best record in the East.
Okay, so you think that's an over, but you think Brooklyn is an under or a no? But you said Brooklyn was a no bet.
I just don't know where to peg the Nets. The Nets could win 65 games and they could win 50. And I wouldn't feel comfortable betting it.
And be equally, you know, title favorites, whether they win 50 or 60.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
The Nets to me are the team that I would just stay away from because it's really about how many games do their stars play, and who knows.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
Like, the Nets could win close to 70 games maybe if, like, everybody's healthy all year and they push. Like, that's not out of the realm of possibility.
Right, but that won't happen.
No, I don't think so. And, like, I think it's more likely that they, you know, to McMahon's point, they kind of severely take their foot off the gas and just kind of make sure all those guys are 100% for the playoffs if they possibly can.
All right, so Philadelphia, just because I want to wrap up the top of the East here, Philadelphia is at 51.5. I think this is a no bet too, because how do you know what's going to happen, what they're going to do with Ben Simmons? How do you know what their roster is going to look like? I think, you know, I mean, if you're a Sixer fan, you want to put down money because you think they're going to be the over, or you hate the Sixers and you want to bet on the under just to have a bet to root for. But how can you possibly predict what the Sixers are
going
to be?
I sort of like the under because I think it's going to be a pretty uncertain situation and it's going to be messy. Yes. It's going to be messy. So, but to your point, they could win 54, 55 games too, but I would say that one, I think, goes under.
I think it's going to be messy. And I think you can, you know, factor in Embiid missing a hand, you know, what are you?
Sure.
10, 15 games.
Will he still be an MVP candidate? All right, what's the over under of games where Joel Embiid will no longer be an MVP candidate?
Hold on, what's the over under? When will our first MVP debate? Will we get through the first week of the season?
Probably not. The other one I like at the top of the East is Miami. I think Miami's another hard over.
47.5.
I think that's a hard over. The Heat always push in the regular season. They've got Kyle Lowry, who is generally a pretty durable guy. Jimmy Butler, generally a pretty durable guy.
But he wasn't
last year. Bam Adebayo, he wasn't last year. But I would tend over his history, like with Harden, I expect him to be out there. I think the Heat are going to be really good. I think they're going to be the clear number three team in the East.
And
I think
they're going to win over 50 games. They're just going to be a pain in the ass to play against. So just like, you know, you're playing the third game of the week and you – going to Miami, and whether you go out or not, you got to deal with those guys just beating the hell out of you. they're not going to be any fun to play.
Yeah, a couple of things. First off, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but just anecdotally, over the last 4 or 5 years, the Heat play a ton of very close games. Just the nature of their style of play, they play a lot of close games because they a lot of times patchwork their team together and they grind games, and it's just how they play under Eric Spoelstra. And you just traded for a guy in Kyle Lowry who is a difference maker in close games. So that's one. Two, as McMahon just referenced, you know, the pandemic pretty much cured the Miami flu because the Miami flu wasn't an option. Now,
unless you were the Rockets.
You got the... get some Miami black eyes there from getting beat up.
A lot worse than that, yeah.
So I hope that the clubs are open for the sake of our country and the sake of our society, but there's a possibility.
Oh, no, they'll be open. Will the NBA players? I mean, trust me, in Florida, it's wide open. Hey,
right.
Yeah, you can go in there and lick the floor, but you know, will the NBA allow it?
Or lick something else. Okay. So in the West, the odds makers, you know, this is the reason we've never really done this on this pod before, but I felt that these numbers were so interesting. The odds makers are struggling here. And they're really not installing favorites.
I'll say this. You look at Utah, they've got a 51.5.
I think that's another hard over.
Yeah, the Jazz won 52 games in a shortened schedule last year.
That's right. I think the Jazz are going to win a ton of games.
And again, I want to point out continuity on their side. I know that there's a little bit, you know, they dumped Derek Favors.
They dumped Favors, but they brought in Rudy Gay, which, you know, clearly they believed was an upgrade. It certainly diversifies the roster. I think we will see Rudy Gay probably play some small ball five. You know, they got the first round pick Azubuki from last year, who, you know, will probably soak up most of the traditional backup big man.
They're begging you to take
the over. They brought in
Whiteside. They're begging you to take the over here, right?
Yeah, yes. Utah, again, go back to what we talked about at the beginning. The incentive structure in Utah, McMahon knows this better than anybody, they are going to try to win as many regular season games as possible. They're going to want to have the number one seed again. I'm sure they look at last season and think if Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell were healthy, that series against the Clippers goes a lot different. Maybe we're in the finals. Maybe everything is different, right? I think they're going to want to get the number one seed again. They always win a ton of games at home because they have that altitude advantage in Utah. Advantage. It's always a great home court advantage with
the fans.
Fans
are going to be there from day one. So. Yeah.
And I really, really like the over for the Jazz a lot.
Yeah. That's probably the, of all of them that are on the list, the Jazz is the one that I thought really kind of stood out as being a low total.
So we mentioned earlier, the Lakers are 51.5. This back before you could bet anywhere, when you'd see Lakers lines, you would see ridiculous lines that were directly aimed at Laker fans who would come to Vegas to bet, because so many people in LA make pilgrimages, especially over the summer, to Vegas. Now that's not the case as much anymore. There's more betting handle going on in New Jersey than there is in Nevada, much less across the country. So, but even still, this is almost like a trap. They're like begging people to take the over here on 51.5 because, you know, the attraction of adding Westbrook to AD and LeBron, but they're going to have a whole new team. I have no idea, you know, just look at last year. Westbrook had a great year, but it took the Wizards months to figure out how to play with them. I know.
Same thing the year before in Houston too.
Same thing the year before in Houston. Same thing with LeBron, his first year with Kyrie. Same thing with LeBron, his first year with D Wade. I think it's reasonable to look at those four situations. And then you see LeBron and Russ coming together and, you know, anticipate that they'll get off to a relatively slow start. Now, does that mean, you know, floating around at a few games above 500, you know, probably something like that. But, we had a 5-on-5 question a little while back that was, will the Lakers be in first place in Christmas? I would be shocked by that just because I do think it's going to take them a while to kind of figure out exactly how all this is going to work.
Plus, you know, AD is going to miss. AD is going to miss games.
Right.
No question. No question. And again, look at the incentives here. Right? Are the Lakers going to be afraid of being on the road against Utah or Phoenix or any of these teams? No, they're not going to be worried about it. They're going to want to get through the season healthy. And you know, Russ has dealt with quad issues the past couple of years. He could take more games off than he's used to. Maybe LeBron James, who always does like to play, also maybe he gets some more scheduled games off. No, yeah, for sure.
But what is this for LeBron year? What?
19?
19. I mean,
So I'm right. So the incentives, again, like this is not about where I think the Lakers easily could win the West. They easily could have the best record in the West in the regular season. But if I'm making a bet, this is about the incentives for the Lakers in terms of how hard they want to push in the regular season. I feel a lot more confident that Utah and another team I think is a hard over in Phoenix. I think those teams are going to be much more incentivized to push hard in the regular season than a team like the Lakers are.
Phoenix 50.5. Continuity on their side. Don't know how much Chris Paul is going to play. They're going to have to protect him to a certain extent. Obviously, they're going to play the long game. They are now a team that has to be thinking about June. Whether you believe it or not, they have to be thinking about June in November, December, January.
Yep.
But you're going to have great continuity coming off of a great season. And, you know, you're looking at Booker and Bridges and Ayton on upswings in their career, still getting better. Mm-hmm. You know,
young guys who are going to be playing hard every game.
Yeah. We'll see, you know, Ayton and Bridges are extension eligible. We'll see whether those extensions get done. Sometimes after guys get contracts, you know, they don't always play their greatest, but I don't see that being with Bridges and Ayton. I don't know. I'm looking for a reason why you should, why it's this number. I guess it's just the competitiveness of the West. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, and I do think there is some skepticism about Phoenix from last season. I think it's a combination of skepticism and also
they benefited getting to the finals because of injuries,
they had the second best record in the NBA. Yeah.
No, for sure. Yeah. I agree. I think it's a combination of a little skepticism about their run. And also like, I think to McMahon's point at the beginning, whichever one of you, all these teams, the top of the West, like the top six teams are sort of think are on their own tier, are basically within three or four wins. Like it's sort of it's sort of Vegas saying, we think there's one group of teams that's much better than everybody else. You decide how you want to rank them. And so because of that, it kind of flattens everybody out.
All right. Now here's one of the most interesting numbers on the board. Golden State Warriors, 48.5.
Total stay away.
If you know what the Warriors are going to be this year, God bless you.
Well, and again, what's Klay Thompson going to be?
No clue.
What's
James Wiseman going to be? What are these two lottery picks? Are they going to help him? I don't know.
Right. Do they make a trade? You know, does Steph play 80 games? Like there's so many questions. Golden State could have the best record in the West.
Does Draymond light the place on fire?
Right. I mean, Golden State could be anywhere from first to sixth or seventh in the West, I think, this year. So that to me is another one where it's not really a commentary on what I think of the team's talent level. It's just that if I'm betting money, I have no way of knowing what that team's going to look like.
Yeah. You could convince me of anything. Well, not anything, but you know, and you're right. Like at some point they could put all their chips in the basket, attach Andrew Wiggins for it and go after Bradley Beal.
I mean, they probably have the widest range of outcomes of any team in the league this year, from what their high end is to their low end. Like they could be a borderline playoff team, or they could have a top three record in the league. And I think either is plausible.
And another one, before we go look at the teams at the bottom, another one that is sort of just, it's very hard to project, are the Clippers. They're 44.5. So they're being projected here as a playoff team at that number. And you don't know for sure on Kawhi, but I think
you make that bet assuming he's not playing a regular season second.
I agree.
I tell you what, I feel like the Mavericks at 47.5 is a little low.
Oh, I did want to talk about Dallas. Let's put Clippers on the back burner. 47. So let me ask you this. When I talk with Bontemps about this, and by the way, this is a genuine question to you, McMahon. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't think I know the answer. Are the Mavericks an improved team?
Yes. Are they a drastically improved team? No, but
are they improved just because you're expecting Luka to get better? I mean, why are they improved?
No, so they're improved. There's a couple reasons. Number one, look, I'm not going to sit here and get into this whole thing about Bullock and sort of whatever. They added solid 3-and-D guys around Luka, so incremental improvement. I think the number one reason the Mavericks should be improved is because I don't think Kristaps Porzingis is going to suck nearly as much as he did for most of last season. Seriously. I mean,
just I know.
It's just a straight up fact. Kristaps Porzingis was dragging around his leg for most of the season. He is a healthy offseason. You know, the man is clearly motivated. I think Carlisle's departure kind of gives him a little bit of a fresh start. It gives them a better chance to manage whatever awkwardness. I'm going to call it more awkwardness than tension between him and Luka. You know, I do think there's a fresh start. There's a ton of motivation. There is a clean bill of health, which, you know, that is clearly subject to change, but he has been able to train, work on his body all off season. So I do think that makes a significant difference. And then, you know, the other thing is this number, if you, you know, look at win percentage and adjusted 82 games, it's right about where they were last season when Josh Richardson was a terrible fit and they were just hammered early in the season by COVID. The Mavericks played, once they got through COVID, they played at a much higher clip than 47.5 wins over an 82-game season. Okay. So, you know, am I saying like, hey, the Mavericks are a bona fide contender? No, they obviously are, you know, they've got a lot to prove there. I just think
so. You like the over at 47.5.
I think they're a 50-ish win team.
And,
yeah.
And Bontemps?
No, I agree. I agree. And I do think you should sort of price in the fact that Luka Doncic is going to get better. I mean, if you told me Luka Doncic is the MVP of the league this year, I certainly wouldn't be surprised by that.
Well, he's not going to be the MVP unless they win in the 50s.
Well, but he could be MVP and they could win in the 50s. And yeah. and I think to McMahon's point, they're Kristaps Porzingis is one of the players with as much on the line this year as anybody in the league, because this is a huge swing year for him. He does get this whole offseason to be healthy. He clearly wasn't right last year. And, you know, he can either reestablish himself as an all-star caliber player in the league, or he's going to have a new normal where he's a sub all-star player in the league. And like, you know, this is sort of the year when all the excuses go away. There's a new coach. He should be healthy, should be able to get back to where he was before if he's going to be able to. So, but even still, I thought that Dallas is an over just looking at the number, because they were basically on pace to get to where they were last year. And the addition of Bullock, Porzingis being healthier, and Luka getting better, you would think should allow them to get to 50 or more. Because look, with Luka, that's another guy who's going to play every game. He's incredibly durable, and when he's on the court, you're just going to win most of the time.
I dial back a little bit on Luka's durability. But the other thing is, Luka.
They should try to get his minutes down, right? McMahon, shouldn't Jason Kidd try to get his minutes down, because he tends to wear out?
It's not his minutes. It's more his usage rate. His minutes weren't that high until playoff time. It's the usage rate.
Yeah.
You know? And look, can Brunson, who had a very good regular season and a very bad playoffs, can he take a significant step forward? I mean, but you know, again, to me, it just really comes down to, I do think they got incrementally better roster-wise. Porzingis should be significantly better. And post-COVID, they played at a much better clip than this over-under.
Okay. All right, so let's move down the list a little bit. One of the teams, before we get to the bottom, that my eyes stopped at, the odds makers are not super-duper impressed with the Bulls offseason. They put them at 41.5, which, by the way, if they win 42 games in the East, they're going to be in the playoffs, which is a struggle point for them.
Maybe.
Yeah, true. It's a struggle point for them.
I mean, that looks to me like they feel pretty impressed by their offseason, because the Bulls were 10 games under 500 last year.
Well, okay, I guess that's true. But when you sign two $85 million players, you're
the general public would, I think, believe the Bulls should win somewhere between 45 and 50 games. That would be my belief. Especially given how I've said what I've said about the Bulls offseason and the way it's been reacted to. So I would say that is below consensus. Look, I think the Bulls are going to be a below 500 team. So I like the under on that one. We've talked about on the pod before, their defense, I think, is going to be one of the absolute worst in the league. And I just don't know if their offense is going to be good enough to make up for that. So I do not. And again, when you're talking about how competitive the Eastern Conference is, you're not going to pick up easy wins in the East like you used to be able to. And I think the best thing you could say for the Bulls is they have a bunch of guys who should be out there on the court a lot and should be able to pick up wins against bad teams. There just aren't very many bad teams to win games against. So I don't think that in this iteration of the East in particular is going to be the same advantage that it would have been a couple of years ago when there were six or seven decent teams in the conference.
So I just think Zach LaVine is one of the most interesting players in the NBA to watch over the next year. Mm-hmm. I know it's not exactly a hot take, but he extraordinarily impressed me over the last 18 months. I was very impressed by the way he held his own playing with Team USA, both in the run-up games when a lot of the guys weren't going full bore and in the games in Tokyo. He played very well in a bunch of those games. He does have mental mistakes. He does screw up on defense at times. Popovich definitely yanked him out of the game once or twice because of he was frustrated with him. I'm not saying that he is going to be a number one on a championship level team, but I think he's a spectacular player. I think he's undervalued and he's underpaid. And the Bulls, I understand why they didn't prioritize getting an extension done with him this offseason. They wanted to prioritize upgrading their roster. I get it, but by doing that, they now leave him as a guy headed for unrestricted free agency. And
so the upgrades better work.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. I just was listening to an interview that DeMar DeRozan, his new teammate, was giving. He was talking to Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson on their podcast, the All the Smoke podcast. And he was talking about how what it means to play on the Olympic team, because DeRozan played on the Olympic team in Rio in 2016. And he talked about how it expands your horizons and playing alongside such elite level players, you know, lets you sort of think about what it would be like to do it on a more regular basis. And it's not just that these guys are hanging out and like plotting to get together. It's just that you enjoy playing with high level talent. Zach LaVine has never played with high level talent. I mean, this one of the most incredible stats of the summer was when Team USA won four straight games. It was the first time Zach LaVine has on a four-game win streak since he was at UCLA. And so I watched.
Will he have a four-game win streak this season?
Well, Bontemps thinks maybe not. I think he will have a four-game win streak this season. I'm telling you, I think Zach LaVine thrived in the Team USA environment. And I'm not saying there was one guy there who he emerged with saying, I want to play with that guy. I think he liked being on, you know, having everything around him elevated. And so the Bulls should be aware of that as they, you know, try to retain him, that, you know, he's going to want an elevated experience. And so you got to hope that Lonzo Ball and DeMar DeRozan are the elevated experience.
Well, and DeRozan at 32 years old, where you not only paid him, but you gave up significant trade assets to get him.
Right.
I mean, that's.
Look, they gave up stuff to get Lonzo Ball. Well, not really stuff, but they've built their team with Lonzo Ball, DeMar DeRozan, and Nick Vucevic to try to convince Zach LaVine he should be in Chicago. And if they finish 12th in the East this year, that's not going to help their cause. And trying
if they
keep
finish
them there.
12th in the East, that's a borderline disaster.
And it's not just, you know, I mean, DeRozan and Vucevic. You know, these are both guys that you've gone all in on, 32 and soon to be 31. Guys who are very good offensive players, but, you know, how do they complement LaVine defensively? And then, you know, Bontemps, as you said, they better be an offensive juggernaut, because they're very likely to be a bottom. I mean, I'm going to say bottom 10 to be polite.
If they finish 20th in defense, they'll be very happy. I mean, they could easily finish 28th in defense.
Right.
Well, I'm a big buyer on Zach LaVine. I think he's got a really good future ahead of him. And
our Bobby Marks has already said next summer is going to be the summer of Zach LaVine. He could basically be the only player available.
It might be an star-level player. And I'm going to say that I think Zach LaVine could be the number two on a championship team.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And some of those teams that maybe have a number one or are dreaming of doing that are going to be trying to get him next year. So that over under, there's a lot more than just a little conversation point in August on the over under on the Bulls with this team. Okay, so looking at the very bottom, the team with the lowest number on this board, Oklahoma City, 22.5.
If Sam Press has anything to do with it, they will hit way under.
Right.
trust me, it won't be for a lack of effort.
Right. They're going to play very young. They offloaded any veteran who could really help them. Al Horford, and they bought
other than Gilgeous Alexander, obviously.
He's 22, and he's the statesman on the roster.
Hey, he's got a
him and Mike Muscala. Mike Muscala.
They're gonna Lou Dort is gonna be leading team meetings.
And they're French and English.
They're gonna play. I think they're gonna play Josh Giddey a whole bunch of minutes, and he's gonna handle the ball. And so whenever
a lot of Giddey Poku pick and roll.
One of the ways to guarantee losses in the NBA is to play young guards. Which is one of the more reasons why there's 1,000 reasons why Doncic is amazing. And it's also one of the reasons why you really get impressed with guys like Ja Morant, and Trae Young, because, it takes guards a while.
Donovan Mitchell is another one, even though he's not pure point, but
you play two young guards. And I know Gilgeous Alexander isn't young, but you play young guards.
Shea just signed a max contract. He's a star level player. Playing on a terrible team.
And look, how creative are they going to be with his playing time? Like how,
all right, so 22 and a half
ways
over
will they find to rest him.
I think 22.5 is a stay away.
I'd take the under.
I mean, I can understand taking the under. It's hard to be a 60 loss team. That's a lot of losses. And I think they have an all-star caliber player on their team. And look, maybe he'll sit a ton of games, but if he's healthy, they could win 24, 25 games. Yeah, and that's still going
to
be a bottom five
home
team.
And, they get to play 41 at home. So,
right. And teams are going to rest guys against them. Like it's a tricky number for me.
Yeah. I'm not sure Bricktown's going to be, I'm not sure that crowd's going to be booming. I'm not sure how much of a home court advantage that is.
What's the name of your place you like to hang
out
there?
The Pink Parrot. I don't know if the Pink Parrot, I've never heard there's a Scottsdale flu. There's obviously the South Beach flu. I think the Pink Parrot flu might be more of a media thing than
you've had
a
the Pink
thing.
Parrot flu.
Shout out, Big Rich.
Orlando is 23.5 over under.
This might be the best bet on the entire board for me.
Okay, Jalen Suggs.
I think Jalen Suggs is going to be awesome. I think the Magic are going to be horrendous.
I think Cole Anthony and Jalen Suggs is going to be extremely awkward at best.
Yes, that I agree with that. They Jonathan Isaac will, be back presumably, but we'll see what he looks like. They're going to have a ton of young guys playing. They drafted Franz Wagner in the top 10. They have RJ Hampton, who's probably going to play a bunch of minutes, who was a super young guy they got in the Aaron Gordon trade last year. Like, they're clearly on the we're going to rebuild through the draft track. And, I think they're probably going to be the worst team in the league. And I think they're going to lose a ton of games. And again, some of this goes back to, if you have 12 teams in the East that are playoff quality teams, I think these teams at the bottom of the conference, the two in particular, I think Cleveland and Orlando, I think are both going to go well under, because they're just going to struggle to find games they can win, because you have a lot of teams in the East that are trying to be in
the
playoffs and being competitive.
What about
the Rubio bounce? Very, very big bounce.
Houston, 25.5, McMahon.
I'd probably take under on that. To me,
they're
so young.
I definitely think the under, because they're going to be playing all these young guys a billion minutes.
Well, and here's one of the biggest challenges for the Rockets is, how do you deal with John Wall and Eric Gordon? Because,
you deal with them by trying to deal them.
Well, good luck with John Wall's in 90.
Gordon's contract's hard too.
Yeah, not as hard though, because the last years there's no guaranteed money. I think Gordon ends up getting traded at some point. But like John Wall, dude, every minute he plays is you're wasting time.
Wouldn't you expect there to be a Blake Griffin type buyout situation there at some point this year, McMahon?
The problem is it's $92 million.
I mean, I get that, but
it's 2 years of Supermax, dude. I mean,
yeah.
And I don't true. Think he's
same situation with Kevin Love. I mean, it's 61 or something there, 62. Yeah. You know, you think there'd be a number, but it's a hard thing to do.
I guess if that was going to happen, it would have happened sort of like what happened with Kemba, right? Where he gets bought out in the offseason, yeah. He can sign for the mid-level somewhere and you can claw back $20 million or so and do it that way. Whereas in the middle of the season, it's harder.
Right. I do think that the Rockets will be a fun young team. But fun young teams, you know, tend to end up around 23, 24 wins.
Right.
Yeah. And look, I mean,
we've there's reason to come out and watch them.
Yeah.
We've talked about their four first round picks. They're going to be fun to watch for sure.
I like their rebuilding direction, which is all I need to understand that it's, you know, in the early stages of a rebuild. And Jalen Green is going to have some spectacular performance. That aren't winning performances because, you know, he's going to have to be great to keep him in games. And you know, you're counting on 19-year-olds to close games. It's tough.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Okay, so a couple of numbers here before we go at the bottom that I don't understand why they're so low. Tell me if you think I'm crazy. Detroit, 25.5.
I get why that's where it is.
Again, I know that they're not super East, talented, but...
Well, the East is also full. Again, the thing you have to factor in here, there are 12 playoff quality teams in the East. So for Denver, Detroit and Cleveland and Orlando, they're going to have very, very, very few games where you give them much of a puncher's chance of winning. Now, they'll win some of them.
History tells us that rookies very rarely impact winning, and rookie guards very, very rarely impact winning.
Right. Even as good as Trae Young was as a rookie, it's not like the Hawks won a ton of games.
They did
not. Or, you know, the Mavericks with Luka. I mean, you can go on.
Yeah. Yep.
So I know that there's a lot of excitement over Cade, but the odds makers are saying here that we do not think that they will be materially better.
They could win 26, 27 games, but I think I would, if I had to pick, I'd say under, but that's probably a stay away because they do have a little bit higher ceiling than Cleveland and Orlando, which I think will definitely go under.
Look at the talent on their roster. I mean, yep. I think they've got way more talent than Cleveland and Orlando.
I agree. I think they're, but I also could see them losing a lot of games because again, they're playing, you know, Sneak Bay, second-year player, Killian Hayes, second-year player, Isaiah Stewart, second-year player, Cade, rookie. You know, they've got a lot of young guys they're playing.
Cleveland's at 26.5, by the way. Okay, a couple more that I'm kind of surprised that they're low, but these they're not just throwing these numbers up here. San Antonio, 29.5.
I love the over on that. I just think they're gonna try to win games. And they lost DeMar, but they added Thad Young, at least for now. They have a bunch of solid players. You know, I do not see them tanking. I don't see them selling off guys.
They had a McDermott who, you know, isn't a huge name, but I think he's a quality
player.
He's a solid piece
for them. Their defense will be a lot better without DeMar. I'm not saying
33
games, but
they were a 33 win team last year in a shortened season.
Exactly.
This very well could be Pop's last year. So, I mean, you know for damn sure it ain't going to be a Tankapalooza.
Well,
I think they'll be a mid-30s win team.
They're saying without DeMar that they're, you know, that they're going to recede. So that's the thing.
And then we can get into the on off numbers with DeMar and question the logic behind that. But
all right, Washington won 34 games last year despite crazy COVID issues and dealing with Westbrook, where they were just all, what they start 0-8 or something, or
there was a
they point lost early they lost season. Like 14 Westbrook's first 14 games he played.
Yeah, there was definitely a point early in the season where I thought Westbrook might end up with more technicals than wins.
Okay,
more
so
T's than W's.
So they ended up with 34 wins and set 34 wins in 72 games and snuck into the eighth seed in the East. And I know that they traded Westbrook, but they are at 33.5 now. I don't know if this is the odds maker saying we think Bradley Beal is going to get traded.
I was going to say that's such a wild card.
But
if Beal doesn't get traded, that should be another, to me, pretty clear over. Again, assuming health.
I mean, the Wizards fans will tell you, some of the lineups that the Wizards had to play last year, some of the guys that they had on the floor at one time, like there were times, I don't want to make any insults, but you now look at their roster, like, I realize that they traded Westbrook, but they are deep. They've got
absolutely.
They are much deeper and should be able to withstand some more things. Like, I'm not going to spend a long time talking about the Wizards here, but I thought 33.5 was pretty low for them.
I definitely thought it was low, and I thought Toronto's number was very low for similar reasons too.
Okay, so Toronto is at 36.5 now. The intention is that they will play at home. Their schedule is scheduled for Scotiabank Arena. That certainly will help them getting to play at home again.
Yes. I think with Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby.
Well, Siakam is going to miss some time with the shoulder.
I was going to say, when will we see Siakam?
I mean, he'll be back early in the season. I think he's supposed to miss about the first month.
Masai Ujiri gave a press conference last week, and he basically pronounced that Siakam is singing Kumbaya again with the organization, that he and Nick Nurse were at odds, and the injury just compounded it. And you know, he got suspended at one point last year for stomping off the court. He says everything's A-okay. Do we believe that?
I believe it more than I don't. I mean, I just think last year was a disaster for them on every front. They started 2-8. They lost 3 or 4 1-point games in the first 2 weeks of the season. They get back to 500. They're well on their way to getting things right. COVID. Then they have all their coaches get COVID. Half their team gets COVID. They got completely derailed. They were playing away from home for the entire season. Everything was a mess.
There was the whole Lowry saga.
Yes. Yeah. There was the whole, where is Kyle going to be? Is he going to be here? Is he not? Then they basically shut him down for the final 6 weeks of the season, in a certain attempt to move up in the lottery. So, you know, I think you look at all that, and I'll just be surprised if the Raptors aren't a above 500 team. They're just a solid team, well-coached, pretty deep in talent. I think they're, because again, 36.5, you're thinking that they're going to be, you know, somewhere between 10th and 12th in the East. I'll be surprised if they're not higher than that.
I think they're a playoff team.
All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see how anything changes. There's really not, this is the first time I can remember where there was really so few teams with such high win expectations. Normally you see, a 57.5 up there, or a 58.5 up there.
Yeah, there's nobody even in the upper 50s. Nobody in the West above 51.5.
Yeah, there's a ton of balance atop the league, which I think is exciting for us to go into the season. I think it's going to be pretty wide open. And again, it goes back to some of these teams that are seen as the favorites don't have a lot of incentive to push in the regular season. And so that gives you some weird numbers. But if you have six teams that are sort of in a group at the top of the West, you kind of have to balance out your chances of teams going high. And, you know, if you think Brooklyn might take their foot off the gas, it lowers things a bit in the East too.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Collective Podcast. McMahon, hope everything goes well for you. Bontemps, get back to the beach. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Adios, amigos.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.